Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I will be your host for the next hour or so. Thanks so much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I've got a great show for you today. In fact, I am going to be giving you an announcement about the show. It's good news. Don't worry. It's all good news. And before I get to it, let me first give you a little bit of context. And it has to do with the show. I'm going to start just by telling you a little bit about the show, which is to say that all things being equal, I would prefer every week to give you good news about tech. I would love to just only give you the exciting announcements and headlines and things that I was excited about. But there is just so much bad and negative news out there that you deserve to know about that I have to spend the majority of my shows warning you, alerting you, you know, issuing criticisms about the most powerful companies in the world and what they are doing to you and your community through their toxic technology products. That's just the reality of how technology tends to affect us. But the truth is, friends, I am not anti-technology. I consider myself to be pro-technology. That's why I got into technology in the first place. I mean, I think technology is cool and it's fun and it offers all sorts of possibilities for creativity and helping people in various ways. Or I should say, it can be all of those things. It often isn't. But it certainly can be. And I wish it was like this more often. What I'm against, that I so often rail against in my comments, what I'm against is technology that exploits people, that deceives people, that mistreats people, and especially the technology that targets the vulnerable for exploitation is what really gets me. And that is, that tends to be the default business model, or at least baked into the business models of the largest big tech companies, in which they cut costs by exploiting the vulnerable in some way. And you, friends, deserve to know what's happening as you use these platforms, what sort of compromises and worse have been baked into those platforms. But again, that's just the reality of the world, which causes me to feel a responsibility to tell you this news, as negative as it is. But I would prefer if that stuff wasn't happening, and that would free me up to give you just good news about technology. So this is a show, one of my occasional shows, when I have dedicated the hour to only give you good news. And that's where this announcement fits in, because the announcement I'm going to tell you is something about the show that involves a use of technology that is fun, that is creative, and I think it's going to make this show better. This is, in other words, this is the kind of technology or the use of technology that I would prefer to see more of. I wish we would see more of, and this is a great example of that. So without further ado, here's the announcement. The announcement is we have a new theme song. Tectonic has a new theme song. It's not the existing theme song that we started today's show with, obviously. I have really enjoyed that theme song, Game Boy tune from the video game Machinarium by Tomas Dvorak, who did the entire Machinarium soundtrack, and all of the songs are great, and Dvorak deserves a lot of credit. But, you know, we're almost 8 years into Tectonic, and I think it's worth trying something new. And I'm very excited to tell you that we have a new theme song for Tectonic that has been composed by a recent guest. Tectonic guest Kirk Pearson has composed a new theme song for Tectonic. Now, if you didn't hear the show with them, this was January 20, 2025, so not that long ago. And if you want a link to that show in which I interviewed Kirk, you can go to the playlist, which you can find at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. And again, find that link for the, what was it, the January 20, 2025 episode, and you can hear my interview with Kirk. Kirk is based in Berkeley, California. They're the founder of an audio studio called Dogbotic, and they're a composer, instrument builder, and the author of the book that I featured on that previous show called Electronic Music from Scratch. And in that interview, Kirk and I talked about how it's fun and creative, and you can learn a lot by noodling around with these electronic circuits and making cool synthesizer sounds. And Kirk gives examples and plays some examples, so you should go back and listen to that. Well, in the wake of that interview, Kirk, to their great credit, reached out to me and said, hey, how about if I used some of my electronic music instruments and skills here at Dogbotic, and I created a new theme song for Tectonic? Because actually they had kind of playfully put together a version of the Tomas Dvorak theme during that interview, and it sounded great. And Kirk said, no, I want to put together a full theme song for Tectonic. I said, fabulous. I mean, I love the work that you do, and which I think came across in our original interview, and whatever you come up with, I'm sure it's going to be outstanding. Well, Kirk really did a great job, you're going to hear. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this audio file that Kirk put together for us. Kirk is going to talk about how they created the new theme song in a kind of how it's made audio tour recorded at, I think, the Dogbotic studio there in Berkeley. And then at the end of that, we're going to hear the new Tectonic theme song in its entirety. And, you know, generally at the beginning of shows from here on out, we're just going to hear, we're not going to have time to hear the whole thing. So you're going to have a chance to hear the whole theme song. And then after that, how it's made with Kirk and hearing the theme song, with whatever time we have left in the show, I'm going to go on to some other good news just to round out the show, this good news show. And I'm going to finish the show by answering a question that I've been getting a lot from listeners, which is, hey, if we get off of the exploitative big tech platforms like you're always telling us to do at the end of the show, what should we use instead? And I have some good news, which is that there are a lot of alternatives to the toxic sludge factories in Northern California and Washington State. There's a lot of independent, non-big tech alternatives that you can start switching to or at least experimenting with. And it's not going to be an exhaustive list, but just a few to get you started. And that'll round out our hour of good news. And if only we could have more hours like this, right? Where it's all good news. So that's the plan. First, we're going to hear from Kirk, who's going to play their new theme song for us. And I'm very excited about that. And then I'm going to round out by going through some big tech alternatives. All good news. Thanks again, friends, for listening today. And let's go ahead and listen to Kirk. Here we go.
Hello, my name is Kirk Pearson. I'm a composer and instrument builder, and I run the audio laboratory Dogbotic, based out of Berkeley, California. We're a studio that specializes in making weird and strange sounds for weird and strange people, and we also teach a lot of workshops on how to build electronic musical instruments. So I grew up in New York listening to WFMU. I stopped for a while, but over the last few years, I've found myself on WFMU a few times, and it is such a thrill every time. Thank you for having me. I composed and produced the new theme music for Tectonic, featuring a bunch of electronic musical instruments that I made myself. And I'm going to show you how we did that. Come on inside. So what you're hearing here is a Speak and Spell. It's the hottest toy of 1978. I've been using them a long time for creative purposes because they're particularly easy to circuit bend. Circuit bending is when you take an electronic noisemaker and you effectively short circuit the interior so that the toy or whatever gets internally confused and ends up producing all sorts of glorious glitchy sounds that the manufacturer didn't intend the toy to make. What's especially glorious about the Speak and Spell is it becomes a really ironically bad speller. You know, you would not want to give this toy to your kid. But after you circuit bend for a while, you'll probably want to build something that's a little more predictable. And that's when building your first oscillator comes in. So an oscillator is nothing particularly interesting. Effectively, it's a circuit that makes a voltage signal that goes high and low and high and low.
High, low, high.
So
low,
basically, you high, could use a circuit low. That, I don't know, makes a light turn on and off or something like that over and over again. But if instead of making the light turn on and off, you use it to move around the inside of a speaker cone, you'll get something that sounds like this. And of course, the faster you make that move, eventually you will hear that as a pitch. So if you can tune the oscillator, i.e. you can determine how frequently it switches between high and low, you can produce a musical note. And that's exactly what we did for the bass line. This is a stupid little keyboard that I built out of tiny buttons. This is built out of a component called a NAND gate. Most fundamental bits of computing architecture. One of trillions in your computer. But it was never intended for musical purposes. There's a bit of distortion and post-processing to it. The classic next trick that you can do once you have one of these waves is divide the frequency. In musical terms, we call this an octave. Two notes an octave apart will be waves that are exactly a multiple of two apart from each other. This here is actually a Game Boy. If you're a whiz kid, you can learn how to use the interface to actually program much more complicated melodies out of the Game Boy, but I couldn't figure out how to do that, so, you know, I ended up reversing it, which gives you kind of a cool effect. This here is the sound I most associate with the concept of futurism, and it's the sound of the spaceway from the Jetsons. I thought a lot about the Jetsons as I was making this theme for two reasons. One is that the Jetsons are by far my greatest childhood influence on what the future was supposed to resemble, you know, with like flying cars and robots and space travel. But the second, which I only kind of recently picked up on, is that the future promoted by the Jetsons is effectively just a future where corporate energy companies have blank checks and government backing to do whatever they want. The Jetsons' image of the future wasn't super accurate, of course, because they didn't really foresee the computer revolution happening at the scale it did. But other than that, the Jetsons did get something right, that corporations will try to get you to consent to the idea and the aesthetics of a future before you're old enough to think it through. A sequencer is basically a switch that can move through a whole bunch of different operations in a sequence. You know, you can pretty easily build a sequencer that can cycle through multiple different voltages and thus play back a little melody. The integrated circuit that this synthesizer is using is intended for touch-tone telephones. And with a little bit of digital crushing and post-processing, you can get it to sound like this. I'm a huge sucker for cassette tape, and I use it a lot. This is literally a loop of cassette tape with this little choral recording, and if we change the speed of the motor in the cassette player, we can change the pitch. We can get a lot more intentional about it and actually pick a couple different motor speeds that we know produce the right notes that we're after. We can use this to make a tape loop into a really kind of nice lush pad sound. If you combine all these elements, it sounds like this. I've always loved working with found sound and radio broadcasts. These here is Mark's show from April Fools, which I don't know why was the one that I had on my computer, but it was. And all of these are individual syllables that we've chopped up and thrown on a grid. Hopefully without sounding too pretentious, I believe a through line between my work as an experimental composer and this wonderful radio program, Tectonic, is that we share a healthy skepticism towards the idea of technology, but also recognize the excitement in finding a novel use for a thing. And that's basically what all technology is, figuring out something new that you can do with a thing that we already knew about. Music technology as a phrase, I think, is a really slippery slope because it does a really good job at telling people they can't participate in it. You know, a lot of people don't believe the type of experimental work they're doing is a technology. But it absolutely is. I think music technology is finding musical applications for apparently non-musical things. Thank you so much, Mark Hurst and Tectonic, for having me on. It is always a sincere pleasure. My name is Kirk Pearson. If you're interested in hearing more about my work or learning about the classes we teach on how to build musical instruments, check us out at dogbotic.com. And I am so proud to be able to present for the first ever time on the airwaves the Tectonic theme in its entirety.
And we are back. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I will be your host for the remaining half hour or so of the show. And what we just heard was the new Tectonic theme song composed by Kirk Pearson out there in Berkeley, California. Kirk is based at Dogbotic. And I love that theme song, and I love the How It's Made audio tour that they put together for us, going through each of the layers of that theme song and showing us how each one is made from some particular discrete instrument or circuit that they made for the process. One thing that I really appreciate about this theme song is that it is so rich with all of those layers working together to create that sound. And if you listen, if you focus on just one of those layers, you can think about, you know, the speak and spell or the excerpts of that particular show that Kirk is drawing on, or the sequencer that they mentioned, or so on. So I'm hoping that as I start the subsequent shows with that theme song, that you'll have some fun listening to the theme song in those ways. The other thing is that the entire theme song, as you heard, is over 5 minutes long, which is too long for us to play, you know, the entirety of at the beginning of a show. So what I might do, I haven't worked this out yet, but what I might do with Kirk's suggestion of doing this is I might start certain shows at a different point in the theme song so that we can hear different segments of it before I come on air. So in all, I think this is going to be a great theme song for us to start the show with, that's going to give a lot of possibilities and has a lot of opportunity for repeat listening. And thanks again to Kirk for putting it together. If you'd like links to Kirk's book, our interview a few months ago, go to the Tectonic playlist for today's show. Like all the playlists, you can find it at the Tectonic website, which is tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and find the playlist that talks about Kirk Pearson and the new theme song. And you can see links there to everything that I've just mentioned. Now, as I said at the top of the show, I want to spend the second half of the show continuing with this theme of good news and tech, because that theme song and the How It's Made was just a, as I said, just a great example of how technology, in my opinion, is supposed to be used. Here we saw the theme song being delivered, composed, and executed layer by layer with these interesting uses of a Game Boy and a Speak and Spell and handmade circuits. And all of it just said creativity and fun and learning, and it's a meaningful experience when we layer something together like that, as opposed to just going to an off-the-shelf exploitative platform that is provided to us by an unethical big tech giant monopoly out in Silicon Valley or Washington State, and just using it according to that tech giant's own instructions. What Kirk did is exactly the opposite, and such a brilliant opposite of how the tech giants want us to use their platforms. So for this second half, continuing with the theme of good news, the good news is we don't have to use those big tech platforms in that way because there are alternatives. And as I said at the beginning of the show, a number of listeners have emailed me. By the way, my email is mark@wfmu.org if you have any questions. But a number of listeners have emailed me recently saying, what are some alternatives to the big tech platforms that we should know about? And the truth is, I do go over tips like this maybe once or twice a year. So this isn't the first time that I've given some of these tips, but I think it is helpful to remind listeners of the existence of alternatives and to name them so that people will maybe not just be reminded, but maybe be motivated to try to get out of the grasp of these big tech monsters and try some new services. So let me dive into this. By the way, as I said at the beginning, this is not an exhaustive list. I may go through these alternatives and you may still think, well, what about the fill in the blank? Why didn't you mention that? I'm not promising to give you every alternative or even every category of alternative out there. This is just a few that came to mind as I put together the notes for this show. And as I give one or two picks for each of these categories, you might also think, if you're well-versed in these things, you might also think, why didn't he mention this other service that I really like? Again, this is not this is not intended to be the authoritative list of the somehow the categorically best big tech alternatives. These are just a few to get listeners started. If you have some suggestions for how I can improve this in a future show, next time I do something like this, again, feel free to email me, mark@wfmu.org. Just trying to give some suggestions for people to get off of the big tech giants. And I figure any of these, if you want to get off the big tech giants and you choose any of, just choose one that you try out once, that's a positive step. Even if we just get a few listeners trying out a few things, that's we're in a better position than we were at the beginning. So let's start. Okay, I should have time for all 10 of these. I have 10 suggestions, or 10, I guess, 10 categories of suggestions. And the form they take is, don't use fill in the blank. Instead, use fill in the blank. Okay, so let's start with the first, and you'll see where I'm going. First one is, don't use Gmail. Okay, just don't use Gmail. Or in each of these, when I say don't use, I understand you may have to use for work or for this or that reason. You may have to continue to use them. But when I say don't use, take it as a suggestion to try something else, maybe to start using it, or just experiment with something outside of big tech's grasp, and maybe eventually you'll switch to it. So let's try this. Don't use Gmail. Use, and I'm going to give you three suggestions here. One is Fastmail. That's F-A-S-T, mail. Fast, like not slow, but fast. Fastmail, which is at fastmail.com, is based in Australia. I also like ProtonMail, which is at proton.me. That's based in Switzerland. Or if you want something based in Germany, you should try TutaMail. That's TUTA.com. By the way, all these links are on the playlist. Again, go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and click the playlist link for the new theme song and Big Tech Alternative Show, and you'll see these. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll see these here. So don't use Gmail. Use Fastmail, ProtonMail, or TutaMail. And one thing to note about these three services, as I'm listing the countries that they're based in, not all, but some of these big tech alternatives that I'm going to suggest to you are not based in the U.S. And I have nothing against the U.S. I'm American. I love my country and so on. But it is helpful, if you want to use some big tech alternatives, to look beyond the U.S. if you are based here, to look to other countries just to diversify where you are using, where you are putting your data, where you are interacting with services. Maybe many of your interactions are with U.S. services, but not all. You know, it's always good to diversify. What I'm trying to do is get you off of this monoculture that is delivered to us by a few companies in Silicon Valley and Washington State. So I think it's helpful. Australia, Switzerland, Germany, great. All those are great alternatives. Don't use Gmail. Google is spying on you. It has all sorts of unethical practices. And as you use Gmail, there are features that nudge you into using other Google services where you continue to be spied on and exploited. You want to get off of Gmail if you can. And if you can't, at least experiment with these. You'll find some sort of free tier, or at least a trial on some or all these services. So Fastmail, ProtonMail, or TutaMail. Next one I have is about your web browser. Don't use Google Chrome. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, that's Chrome. I shouldn't use Chrome. That's what my computer came with. Just don't, if you can, get yourself off of Chrome, because Chrome is a browser made by Google. I would categorize Chrome as malware or perhaps spyware. It is larded down with Google's surveillance hooks, and Google is drawing down all sorts of data on you and your interactions and your travels through the web, the internet. You do not want to use Chrome. Any privacy expert will tell you that is the number one absolute worst browser for you to use. Do not use Google Chrome if you can. There's many, many browsers out there that are not touched by Google that are good alternatives. I'm just going to give you two. You may have others that you like, but one is called LibreWolf. That's L-I-B-R-E Wolf, like the animal, LibreWolf.net. And the other one is DuckDuckGo, which, yes, is the name of a search engine. This is the same company, DuckDuckGo, the alternative search engine, also has a web browser, and you can find that if you go to the duckduckgo.com site and just navigate down to the browser page or use the link in the playlist. One thing I do like about DuckDuckGo's browser is that if you load up a YouTube, of course, being the service from Google, that has all sorts of surveillance larded into its code. If you put in a YouTube address into the DuckDuckGo browser, it turns into what they call, I think it's called the Duck Viewer, something like that. Anyway, DuckDuckGo strips out all of Google's surveillance and the ads, and just plays the video. And so if you want to skip all the surveillance and all of the advertisements, use the DuckDuckGo browser. It's free. You put in a YouTube address, and it will just give you the video. I use that all the time. LibreWolf is an interesting choice because it's based on Firefox, which is itself a viable alternative to Google. Although Firefox, which is made by Mozilla, takes a lot of funding from Google, Firefox still does have some independence from Google. But LibreWolf is even a step off of Firefox, so it's worth checking out. So don't use Google Chrome, use LibreWolf or DuckDuckGo. There are others like Brave, and I could go into many other details, but I gotta move on. Let's go to number three about messaging apps. Do not use WhatsApp. WhatsApp is owned by Mark Zuckerberg. It is a Facebook Meta product. Some people don't know that, but it's Facebook's WhatsApp. And obviously do not use Facebook Messenger for the same reason. But a lot of people out there are using WhatsApp and they say, oh, but you know, Facebook promises that the messages are encrypted, so I have all sorts of privacy. Nope. I mean, maybe the messages are encrypted, but the idea that you have privacy, nope. Nope. Because Facebook is surveilling the metadata of your conversations. They know who you're talking to, when, and they, believe me, they are trying to get as much data from you as intrusively as they can, even assuming they abide by their promise of encrypted communications. The service is not to be seen as any sort of privacy-focused messaging service. Get yourself off of WhatsApp if you can. I know a lot of people have to use WhatsApp because a certain group or friend or relative is on WhatsApp, but if you can, get yourself off of WhatsApp. Do not, a good rule of thumb, friends, good rule of thumb is just don't use anything ever that Mark Zuckerberg created or owns. Just don't. And Mark Zuckerberg did not create WhatsApp. That's a whole other story, but he does own WhatsApp. And so rule of thumb, if Zuck owns it, don't use it if you can possibly get yourself off. So don't use WhatsApp. Instead, there's a bunch that you can choose from. These are all independent services. They are not big tech owned. One is called Signal. Signal.org. Actually, the story of Signal has a connection to the WhatsApp origin story. Again, I don't have time for that, but Signal is definitely worth checking out. There's another one called Element, which is at element.io. There's a third one called Delta Chat, which is at delta.chat. And a fourth one that I would recommend looking into is called Threema. That's T-H-R-E-E-M-A, threema.com. And some of those are based in Europe and some are based here in the US, but all of them are worth checking out. So if you want an encrypted chat that Zuckerberg is not surveilling the metadata of, go and check out Signal, Element, Delta Chat, or Threema, but do not use WhatsApp. Next, don't use Facebook's Instagram. Again, just making sure everybody knows, because some people are not aware, Instagram is owned by Mark Zuckerberg. That is a Facebook Meta production. Do not use Instagram if you can possibly avoid it. Again, some people have to use it for work, or maybe, I don't know, some people have told me they feel obligated to post on Instagram. But friends, if you possibly can get out of Zuck's clutches, do it. Just delete your Instagram account, or at least give another service a chance. At least just experiment a little bit. And I would recommend a decentralized service called PixelFed. That's pixelfed.org. This is decentralized, non-commercial. There's no advertising. There's no surveillance. I believe it's open source. This is image sharing to a community the way it is supposed to be done, the way people wish it was, that it did not get larded down with surveillance and ads and creepy billionaires. It has none of that. Check out pixelfed.org. There are plenty of people using it and uploading interesting things. You can follow their accounts and you can post as well for free. So check out pixelfed.org. Similarly, YouTube, which is owned by Google. Another rule of thumb alongside the rule of thumb of don't use anything that Mark Zuckerberg owns, don't use anything owned by Google/Alphabet. Just don't. It's all surveillance, and it's as intrusive as possible. It's deceptive. It is manipulating you in ways that you're not aware of. Do not use Google's YouTube, which is hard for me to say because there are some times that I go to YouTube to source videos or songs that I'm going to use for the show, and I get those off of YouTube. But there are increasing numbers of videos on an alternative called PeerTube. That's PeerTube, which you can find at joinpeertube.org. And if you remember, when I spoke with Emily Bender and Alex Hanna recently about their book, The AI Con, I mentioned during the interview that I so appreciated that their video version of their podcast was on PeerTube. It was not on YouTube, it was on PeerTube. And so you can get people like Emily Bender and Alex Hanna on PeerTube and lots more. So check out PeerTube. I know it's at this stage, it is difficult and or unrealistic to not ever go and load a YouTube video. But again, I gave you another tip earlier. If you have to load a YouTube video, at least load it up in the DuckDuckGo browser so that strips out all of Google's surveillance and the ads. So Google gets no data and gets no ad revenue from you watching the video. But if you can, go check out PeerTube. If you're going to upload a video, upload it to PeerTube. Send the PeerTube address to your friends, and we can start building some momentum there. Let's move on. Goodreads. This is a smaller service, but some people are familiar with Goodreads. This is where people will post book reviews, lists of books that they have read and enjoyed. Some people go there to find recommendations for other books. And, you know, when Goodreads started, I think it started back in before 2010, I believe, is when Goodreads started. It used to be an independent service, and it was just a small team trying to connect people with other book lovers, and it was great. And then they got venture capital, and then they got bigger, and then they wanted to cash out, and then they sold to Amazon. Yes, so if you use Goodreads, I want to make sure you understand you are being surveilled by Amazon. Goodreads is owned by Amazon. It is an Amazon service, so we should talk about it as Amazon's Goodreads. Do not use Amazon's Goodreads for your book recommendations. Instead, use this decentralized service called Bookworm, which, much like PeerTube and PixelFed, is independent, non-commercial, decentralized, open source, and so on. There are no billionaires involved. And this is the sort of sharing network that we need to build towards so that we can have more good news in our tech lives. Bookworm is at joinbookworm.com, and I've got to spell that for you because it's a little strange. Joinbookworm, joinbookworm.com. And again, you can find the link to Join Bookworm and all of these other links at the Tectonic playlist at tectonic.fm. So don't use Amazon's Goodreads. Use Bookworm. Or for that matter, if you want a recommendation, how about this? Go find your friend who is really into books and ask your friend, hey, what book should I go read next? Or go to a non-monopolistic bookstore, like one in person. Like here in New York City, we have so many independent bookstores. One that I like is The Strand. Go to The Strand and ask one of the nice people who work at The Strand, what book should I read next? Or wherever you live, go to your public library. I'm a huge fan of the public library. Go to a librarian at your public library and ask them for guidance. Don't use Amazon's Goodreads because you will then be surveilled by Silicon Valley. Use Bookworm, use an independent bookstore, or use your local public library. Okay, let's go on to Google Cloud. For a lot of people, they use Google Cloud or some other big tech cloud service in order to store their digital files, you know that's not a good idea. It's never good to store your files with a big tech giant. So don't use Google Cloud. And I don't know how many of you this applies to, but at some point, someone will probably recommend that you store your data, your files, your photos, and so on, with some big tech giant. You have options. You do not have to use the big tech company. I'm going to recommend that you use a service called Nextcloud. That's nextcloud.com. Or there's another one that's based in Germany called FileN. That's FileN.io. And you can start storing your files with those services. Just know that if you are storing your files with a big tech service, that you are liable to fall victim to anything that happens in that monoculture. If anything happens to your account, for example, there was a story years ago when a father did something totally innocent, uploaded a photo for the pediatrician of his infant son. Google's algorithm didn't like the photo, and Google automatically shut down his entire Google account. That father then did not have any access to any of his Google services. No email, no calendar, no files, no photos, no docs, nothing. And it took a long time for him to get it straightened out, all because of some algorithm at a big tech giant didn't like something. It's a good idea if you decentralize your activity and your data. Don't, you know, to use the old phrase, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. That is doubly true for dealing with these unethical big tech giants. So lots of reasons not to use services like Google Cloud. Use something else. Find something, anything else than a Google or other big tech giant. So Nextcloud or FileN are two that you might like to look into. Continuing on the same vein, we've got Google Docs. Now, Google Docs is something that comes up a lot. I have had to use it in some other contexts when people invite me onto a Google Doc. The basic idea is that it is like a word processing document where multiple people can read and edit the same document at the same time, or maybe it looks like a spreadsheet document where people can be filling in different cells and numbers and calculations all at the same time. And let me just say, I think the idea of online real-time collaboration is a good idea. I think that's another use of technology that can be very helpful to people. I have no problem with group collaboration software online. The problem I have is when people are forced into using it from Google or Microsoft has a version of it in their Office 365. And for all the reasons I've told you before, we have to get off of these big tech giants. I don't like using Google Docs because I don't like using anything from Google, and I don't like putting any of data of mine, any kind of data or writing, onto a Google server because it is liable to be used by Google in some way. They could use it for training their AI engines. They could surveil it. They could extract some sort of data. And who knows what, of course, they would promise. We would never. How dare you? We would never. And if you trust what Google says, I've got almost 8 years of Tectonic for you to listen to disabuse you of that notion. Don't use Google Docs. Don't use the document sharing in Microsoft Office 365. There are options out there that are being built. The one that I know of that is full-featured enough for you to start switching over is called CryptPad. I believe it's based in France. It calls itself a collaborative office suite that is end-to-end encrypted and open source. And you can find that at cryptpad.org. That's CryptPad.org. So next time someone says, hey, let's set up a Google Doc so we can collaborate on whatever, you can say, great idea to collaborate. That's no problem by me. I'd be happy to collaborate, but let's not use Google Docs. Let's try CryptPad. Let's just try it out with one document and see how it works. And from there, you can tell people, isn't it nice that we're using an open source encrypted service that is not surveilling us and is not part of the big tech cabal? Okay, so that's Google Docs. Use CryptPad. Next, don't use an iPhone or Google surveillance phone. And I say this advisedly because I myself carry an iPhone, and I've covered this on past shows. I'm a fellow traveler, friends. I'm not saying I have reached nirvana yet, having freed myself from the big tech giants, but this is aspirational for me, as it will be for some of you. Don't use an iPhone. Definitely do not use a Google surveillance phone. There are lots of options out there. I'm going to give you three. One is a Fair phone. That's F-A-I-R phone. That's a company based in the Netherlands, fairphone.com. You can also use a Punkt phone. That's P-U-N-K-T.ch. CH for Switzerland, Punkt, or past guests on the show, The Light Phone, which is at thelightphone.com. They're based in Brooklyn and have a minimally featured phone that is worth checking out. So whether it's a Fair phone, a Punkt phone, or a Light phone, and by the way, if you do use a Google phone, there are services that will remove the Google Android spyware from the phone, and they will install a different operating system on the phone that has nothing to do with Google and no Google hooks. It's called Calyx OS. That's C-A-L-Y-X OS, and you can find it at calyxos.org, and you can get information on which phones you can get to install Calyx OS on the phone. So again, aspirationally for me and for many of you, don't use an iPhone. Definitely do not use a Google surveillance phone. And if you have to use Google hardware, don't use Android. Get the Android wiped and put on Calyx OS. And finally, last tip I'll give, and this is number 10, don't use an Apple or Windows laptop computer or desktop computer. This again is aspirational for me because I do use an Apple in my work. But I have been feeling like the frog slowly being boiled by Apple's successive updates, in which they are acting more and more like a typical big tech company, which is to say more and more like a Google or a Microsoft. And so at some point, I am going to need to switch off from Apple. So don't use an Apple or Windows computer. Instead, use a computer using Linux that's running the Linux operating system. And by the way, I did a whole show on this a while back. If you go to tectonic.fm and find the May 27, 2024 Tectonic, I did a whole show on Linux as the superior operating system to Mac's Apple Mac's operating system, and certainly superior to Microsoft Windows. And at some point, inevitably, I am going to have to switch myself over to Linux. And if you are now ready to get a Linux computer, what I would recommend is a laptop from a company called Framework. This is, you can find them online at frame.work. And the company Framework delivers computers, laptops, that are running the Linux operating system, and they are modular. Their components are modular, so it's really easy to switch out the battery if the battery goes, or other easy to take out or put in RAM or what have you. Framework is creating the laptops that are favored by the right to repair aficionados, of which I am one, and we need more companies like Framework that are making laptops like that. So that is tip number 10. Don't use an Apple or Windows computer. Use a Framework laptop running Linux, and go back in the archives to learn more about Linux and the distributions that I recommend. And those are my tips. That's a non-exhaustive list of some of the big tech alternatives that I would recommend. And I hope you have enjoyed, friends, this show full of good news. There is good tech news out there. I don't have a lot of time to cover it week to week because there's so much more bad news, but I promise I will try to come back to the good news from time to time. And thanks again for listening, and thanks again to Kirk Pearson for that awesome new theme song. You are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, and 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. My homework for you next time, friends, is Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. Our outro this evening is written, composed, and performed by Kirk Pearson. The song is called The Self-Driving Car. The song is called The Self-Driving Car's Gonna Repossess Itself. Have a great week, everybody.
Watch it drive away from you. The process will be swift and painless. A feature that you never knew. The self-guiding car is gonna lock you out when your payment's over.
Yes, indeed. Good evening and welcome to another installment of It's Complicated, an hour, 60 minutes of Prague and Prague-adjacent music with me, your host, Dave Mandel. The buck stops here. If you don't like the music, it's on me. But you'll like it. We're going to start tonight's show with something I've been meaning to play for a while. I'm going to try not to make this too long an introduction, but the album After Bathing at Baxter's by Jefferson Airplane is one of my very, very, very favorite albums in the world. Still, I think the record's a masterpiece. I don't do top five, top ten, whatever, but if I did, it would be somewhere on that list. And I've been meaning to play this track for a while, and it is one of the lesser-known tracks on the album, but one of my favorites. It's a Grace Slick composition called Rejoice, and the Joyce, it's Rejoice, R-E-J-O-Y-C-E. The Joyce refers to James Joyce and Ulysses, and it's a big, epic thing with many, many parts, and the track is, that is. And among other things, and absolutely, definitely proggy, among other things, among other reasons, I would call it proggy, is that there's several sections of the tune are in 7/8 time. 7/8 time was, for some reason, at one point, Grace Slick became fascinated with, she discovered the time signature 7/8 and became kind of fascinated with it. And there's here and there in various Jefferson Airplane tracks and recordings of the time, of that period, there are bits in 7/8 time. And that's great. Great. We need more of that. So I'm going to play that track now. Oh, I forgot the most important part. So I was planning to play that today, right? I cross my heart, this is the absolute truth. I was planning to play this track today, and I found out there's Bloomsday, which is the reference to Ulysses, which takes place on what is now called Bloomsday, and literary geeks, of which I am not one, make a big fuss about Bloomsday every year, and they do various tributes, parades, God knows what, commemorating James Joyce and Ulysses. Today, I swear to God, today, June 16th, is Bloomsday. I had no idea. What are the odds? There's like a 1 in 365 chance that I would hit that. So it just happens to be Bloomsday. I found that out today after I was already planning to play this. That's enough. Great song. You will love this if you haven't heard it. And especially, most of all, listen to the bass playing of the master, Jack Cassidy.
Chemical chains. You've shattered the warning. I'm alive. Wake me warm. Let me see you moving. Smiling in my room, you know, you'll be inside of my mind soon. You in the room, Saxon sick on the holy dregs, and they're constant getting throw up on his leg. Molly's gone to blazes, Boylan's crotch amazes any woman whose husband sleeps with his head all buried down at the foot of his bed. Stephen won't give his arm to no gold star mother's farm. War's good business, so give your son, and I'd rather have my country die for me.
Rejoice on Bloomsday by Amazing Coincidence, Grace Slick, Jefferson Airplane, Jack Cassidy, honorable mention. And yes, June 16th today is the day that that Ulysses takes place on. Not that I've read it, mind you. I got up to like page 17 or 18 once. Don't tell anybody. We're going to hear a couple of related things now. We're going to hear first from a group called Web. They were originally called The Web. The whole the non-the thing is complicated and boring, actually. whether you, the Pink Floyd, you know, sometimes bands add the sometimes they drop it. Who knows?